Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Alfred Adiskin. This is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. It is Tuesday, the 18th day of June, year of our Lord, 2013. Our co-host will be Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent from Argentina. He'll be joining us shortly. First, we've got the market reports. Gold is down $16.50 to $1,369.20 per ounce. Silver's off 19 cents to $21.75 per ounce. Platinum is up $7 to $1,448. Palladium is down 5 to $713. Dow Jones is up 130 points to 15,310. NASDAQ is off 28 points to 3,480. New York Stock Exchange up 66 points to 9,404. U.S. dollar is down 0.04 to 80.59. Crude oil is up 67 cents to $98.44 per ounce. What's it all mean, Roger? Roger, are you there? Got to turn your mute button off, Roger. Are we having a problem right now, Producer Frank?
Yes, we are. Roger is not online.
I see. Roger's being a bad boy.
Or Argentina, right, Frank, well, is.
yeah, hard to say. Yeah, but in any case, Roger's not online, so apparently we're going to have to do this program au naturel. That is to say, by myself, unless and until Roger calls in, but so far as he's offline right now, can't reach him. So, got the markets. What does it mean? Gold has got, it's taken another beating today, $16.50. We're back down to $1,370 per ounce. This is no fun. It's no picnic. And the big question right now is, how long can the forces that be continue to knock the price of gold around? All right. We should almost have, you know, the bookies take in Las Vegas, they will give you, they'll make bets on just about anything. I wonder what the line is on when the powers that be will no longer be able to suppress the price of gold. It would be interesting to create a betting environment on that and see what the world had to say and take bets, take wagers, and it would give this a little more reality in some regards. You see it, and it happens, and it happens again, and it happens again. And I am of the opinion that they can't persist with the suppression forever. Can't go on. And when I say forever, I mean, I don't think they can hold it together for the rest of this year. For me, I think they have to lose their ability to suppress the price of gold in the near future. It should happen. And if it doesn't, there are people in the East, you may have seen reports and photographs. There were allegedly lines as long as 10,000 people in China trying to buy gold in the last several days. Do you understand that? I grew up in a town that didn't have 10,000 people in it. They have lines with 10,000 people to buy gold. The people in the East understand what's happening far better than the American people do. What our government and the powers that be that are suppressing the price of gold, what they're doing right now is making it possible for enormous sums of gold to be transferred from this country to China, Japan, other Eastern countries, because we are giving the gold away. A price of $1,370 per ounce is a fire sale. It's a giveaway. People who think that's all gold is worth are stupid. And yet, that appears to them, that is the impression that's being created by the powers that be in our own markets. And the result is, Asians are buying gold, and we are shipping gold to them, and we're giving it away. We are literally giving it away. How long can that continue? And whose gold is being given away? There are more than a few rumors that the gold that was formerly at Fort Knox and perhaps in the Federal Reserve Bank of New York that was stored on behalf of the United States government treasury, there are certainly rumors, and they are credible, that much of that gold has been gone. It's gone. Allegedly, we have 8,200 tons of gold in the Federal Reserve that in theory belongs to the United States. There are rumors and conspiracy theories and evidence to suggest that our government has been liquidating that gold. They've been selling it. And they have been putting hundreds and even thousands of tons of gold into the market in order to try to hold the price down. Now, in doing so, they are this. If they're doing so, if those stories, if those rumors are correct, by allowing the gold to be moved from our treasury to China's, they are disabling, debilitating, making war on the United States of America. You and I are going to wake up one of these days, and there isn't going to be any gold in Fort Knox. And I guarantee you that will be a terrible moment for the people in the United States of America. And the only people that are going to escape that moment or mitigate that moment are those who have their own little Fort Knox in their own backyard, under the basement, up in the attic, wherever you want to keep it. But if you don't have any gold, you are going to wish that you had. And again, in my opinion, you should emulate the example set by Asia and buy all the gold you can lay your hands on at the price of $1,370 an ounce, and all the silver you can find for $22 an ounce, which is basically the price today. These are spectacular bargains. And they're not just bargains, they're worse than bargains. They are a kind of perversion where people in positions of power are mandating, have managed to implement policies that compel the sale of physical gold at a price that is unreasonable, unrealistic, and mistaken. So what do we got out? What else do we have today? Insofar as Roger, Town Crier is back online, Frank. So if you can reach him, we can get Roger on the line and get him to explain himself. Roger, are you here yet or not? Uh-huh. He's not here yet. That's because Frank has not been paying close attention, hasn't followed. Ah, he's on now. Roger. Yeah, you got to turn off your mute button. Somebody's got to make a connection here. If Roger's more, he's got to do more than just be on the line. We've actually got to be able to hear him.
Well, I got to be on there for more than a nanosecond for you to hear me. Well, what is your excuse du jour, Roger? Did the dog eat your modem or something like that?
It's a problem somewhere between here and there.
Uh-huh.
That's the only excuse I've got, man. The net's been real strong, and 10 minutes before the show, boom, it goes down at home. So I hop on the little trusty moto and run over here to the hotel and get over here, and it's dropping in and out here. So obviously it's a system problem. But let's not waste the people's time with that. I am here, and we'll just take advantage of the time we do have together. I heard you talking a little bit about this gold train going over to the east.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got the what usually goes along with something like that is the pot being stirred in Syria pretty heavy. But it seems like they're walking away looking real guilty. And Assad over there seems to be whipping their little behinds. And every week that we get on here and talk about this, Al, they get themselves tighter in a corner, it looks like to me.
And you say they get themselves tighter in a corner. You are referring to the United States government, to who? Who are you referring to by
that? You're talking about the people that manipulate the United States government for their own greedy and selfish ends.
I understand. Yeah, it does appear, and how much longer can it go? For example, here's an article from the New York Times in Embattled Detroit, No Talk of Sharing Pain. That's the headline. It says when New York City threatened to declare bankruptcy in 1975, the idea so terrified everyone that it forced the city's workers and recalcitrant bankers to sit down and find ways to share the pain. Now another large city, Detroit, appears to be on the brink of filing for bankruptcy, but there is little talk of sharing the pain. Instead, the fiscal crisis in Michigan is setting up as a gigantic clash between bondholders and city retirees, meaning those people who worked for the city and had what they expected to be fat pensions are going to find out they're going to be lucky to get 10 cents on the dollar. There's going to be a big clash. No one's doing anything to alleviate this problem. Mike, what I'm wondering about, is this an isolated event? Is it much ado about Michigan? It doesn't cause for concern. Or is this one of those possible black swans, a cataclysmic event that can all of a sudden trigger big trouble? Is this a domino, a big domino that can trigger big trouble? What do you think?
Well, it certainly could be. I don't know about this triggering, but I'll tell you what, it certainly signals big trouble. Because what their demise was combined with several things, the loss of the manufacturing base, the people moving out, all of the probably bad decisions of loading them down with derivatives to try and alleviate some of their pain here a few years back when Goldman Sachs was pulling the wool over everybody's eyes with those things. And, you know, you've had Orange County, California went down a couple of years ago. They were the first when they were the canary in the coal mine. Birmingham is second. And they're both of those cities are in deep caca. And now you got the whole city of Detroit with a myriad of problems, really. You know, there's many and varied problems, I think, up there. I'm not totally familiar, but you can just get a good
idea. Deep in the hole, they'll never get out.
It's terrible. But what I was going to say, as you're talking about, and I read the article, too, 10 cents on the dollar for these retirees, and you're right, that's exactly the battle. It looming is the bondholders and the retirees, the people that they owe that gave up in good faith everything they worked for those majority of their years to have those comfortable years, and they're not going to get it, all right? And the bad thing is that what you're seeing right there is going to be symptomatic of the entire country because they have manipulated all these pensions in this pension, some kind of pension fund where the companies could dump off their undervalued pensions over this government thing like a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac thing. And they've got like the FDIC's got a, what, minus 25 cents for every $100 they're supposed to have insured or something. And it's about the same thing over here in this pension, federal pension guarantee fund or whatever they call it. And, you know, it all boils down to this, Sal. The whole thing is a scam. The whole thing is a scam.
And you know what else is sad about it? It's not a new scam. It's been done in its own way. They've used fiat currencies something like 275 times in world history, and they blow up every single time except for 23 that are still in existence right now, and they're going to blow up before it's all over. And no one learns.
Nobody learns from this stuff. This is not news. And it is sad and unfortunate, but it's evidence of a kind of colorblindness that afflicts average Americans. They do not understand money. They don't know anything about it other than how to count it. And they do trust the government with its bizarre promises rather than taking personal responsibility. It always fails, and yet we'll stumble in. We're going to go through this. We're going to pay a price that's going to remind us of the Civil War before this is over. And within 15 years maximum, and probably less than 10, after the trauma is over, government's going to be back promising people some sort of a retirement deal. Give us your money now, and we promise, Scout's Honor, we'll give you some back when you get old. It'll be the same racket, and people fall for it again and again and again. So who's responsible? Is this the problem caused by corrupt and deceitful politicians? Can we blame them, or do we have to blame the people for simply being gullible and dumb enough to believe in the idea of a free lunch?
There you go with that chicken and the egg thing again.
Yeah.
You always got to go back to the people. Certainly, these people that are behind the government, these dark, auspicious people, manipulate everything for their own ends. They're psychopaths. Okay. They have no feeling for you, and they're out there to glean and gather everything for themselves because their love of self is total. So, you know, you've always got to be on guard against that. And what you just said a minute ago, isn't that what Benjamin Franklin said? He said, we'd have happily borne the tax on little t if it wasn't for this money that the people refused to understand. I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was paraphrased something like that, for the lack of knowledge of money. So, I mean, you know, there's nothing new under the sun, Al. And you're right, the people don't learn. You know, maybe this time will be different because of the internet. Okay, you can always take and say, lay this back, and say the winners always write the history. So perhaps, and you know that a lot of this stuff is written out of the history books, and most people take what they come through in education as their parameters of their world. And so, you know, possibly you could lay some of it off on that, but ultimately it goes on the people because we're supposed to always be vigilant, always.
Well, I agree. And why do you have to be vigilant? Why should you always be vigilant?
Well, because these forces are out there, and any time that you're going to walk a good line, a straight line of nobility and righteousness in your life, if you will, you've always got to be cautious of these dark forces because they're there to alter reality and to try and trick you into their illusion. And
I agree.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Government routinely attracts the psychopaths, the racketeers, the con artists, the hustlers. Government is a place to go for people who don't actually want to work for a living. They'll show up on time, but in terms of making a productive contribution, it is minimal. I won't say it's completely worthless being in government service, but they don't build houses, cars, trucks, planes, boats. They don't grow food. All they do is get in the way and insist on their right and their power to tell the rest of the people who are actually trying to work, tell us how to do it. It can't be afforded. And on top of which, the principal purpose for controlling people like you and me is to exploit us. See how much money they can get out of us. I saw a report.
At it. They're a corporation, right?
They got a lot of employees.
Well, you got a lot of employees up there for a corporation that doesn't make anything because government doesn't make anything. They got to take everything that they turn around and give back out. So they got a whole big staff there for an organization that doesn't make anything except the oppressive laws. Huh?
We'll get to that. We're going to take a break here in about 20 seconds. When we come back, we will talk about a new law. That's been enacted by Congress. It's the immigration bill, and we'll have a little bit to say about that when we get back. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Roger S. Sales, our foreign correspondent from Argentina on financial survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask here at Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. My co-host is Roger S. Sales, calling in from Argentina. Before we get back to Roger, matter of fact, we've got a caller. We'll get to the caller in a moment. First, I want to remind you that we have a special du jour from Discount Gold and Silver. This is a bullion special. You can purchase a 1/2 ounce of gold American Eagle and 1 ounce silver American Eagle, shipping included, $795. It's a 1/2 ounce gold eagle, 1 ounce American silver eagle, $795, shipping included. Gold American Eagle coins attract attention from collectors and investors around the world for their beautiful patriotic design and gold value. These 1/2 ounce gold eagles are in brilliant uncirculated condition. Silver American Eagle is considered one of the most beautiful coins ever minted. These 1 ounce silver eagles contain 99.9% pure silver. Both coins are legal tender. Both coins, 1/2 ounce gold American Eagle, 1 ounce silver American Eagle, both of them to $795 shipping included. Call Carla at 1-800-375-4188. That's Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Roger, we've got a caller. Jim from West Virginia is on the line. Jim, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Y'all talk about gold. Can I talk about silver a little bit?
You can talk all you want about silver for 35, 40 seconds. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, all jokes aside, my dad was a chemist. He knew about the chemical properties of silver. And when the Federal Reserve notes went to pot and silver certificates were no longer going to be redeemed, he used to go to New York on a regular basis, and he'd go by the Federal Reserve Bank and get little granules of silver. Now, prior to the Industrial Revolution, silver was a monetary metal. But it is an entirely different market, and it's entirely undervalued. Classically, it was like 3/4 of a troy ounce was a dollar of silver way back when 1792, original, and a 20th of an ounce of gold. So there's a ratio of about 15 to 1. At any rate, it's now 60-something to 1. I don't track it anymore. But let me tell you some of the industrial uses for silver for those who don't know. First of all, the silver, which is being dumped on the market the last however many years, 15, I don't know, 20, came from Oak Ridge, Tennessee, because they need a super-duper electromagnet to separate U-235 from U-238. The only way they could do that was to have a super good conductor like silver, so they used a gob and a bunch of silver wire and made electromagnets with it. And that was parsed out. Actually, silver was borrowed from the U.S. Treasury, and now it's been sold out onto the market. Another ripoff, just like you're talking about Fort Knox. But silver's amazing stuff. I've done lost wax casting where you make something out of wax. You put a special plaster around it, and then you put a little hole down through it, and then with the little thing, and then you get the silver real hot, pour it into there, and you got a perfect representation of the wax. Now, if you try to do that with brass, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You have to start all over again, but you have a little part, you can do that. I used to carry pure silver with me when I worked on industrial instrumentation, and I would carry it with me to prove temperature sensors, because silver, pure silver, freezes and thaws at an exact temperature. I don't remember what it is right now. And I would use that and prove it, and I would give them a little bit of silver, say, here, assay it if you don't believe me, because there's some life and death process involved with temperature, and I proved out the temperature sensors. Once while I was in the griddle like this, there was a valve which broke in Virginia Pocahontas, number 8 Island Creek, purchased by Consol Gardenside on Saturday afternoon. Now, what made this so important is it was about a 6 or 8 inch valve, something like that. The casting broke with the handle hooked into it. And if that valve didn't work, the mines were down at 12:01 Monday morning, and that was $50,000 an hour. They didn't have another valve they could get hold of. And so they looked at, oh, my God. I said, oh, hey, whoa, fellas, get that thing out of there. We'll fix it. They looked at me like I was crazy. There are threads on the outside, threads on the inside. And I took that silly thing and tinned it with silver solder, 50% silver solder, many things that you would not believe, and then tinned the other part of it. And I said, okay, you and me, there's another fella who was there. I said, you and me going to do a little dance. I put one part of the casting on top of the other, wet it down with the silver. I said, you and me going to do a little dance. You go on this side, and I'll go on that side. We'll take it and heat it all the way around. We did, and we right down into place. Even the threads worked. And they were sitting there with their teeth hanging out. They could not believe it worked. Silver is a super-duper temperature conductor as well as electrical conductor. There are
okay, but let me ask you this. What do you think right now? Silver is linked to gold in the public's mind because in the past we had a bimetallic monetary system in this country where we had both silver and gold as our monetary basis.
Right.
Do you think, there's no doubt in my mind that gold is and will always be a monetary metal.
Absolutely.
But do you think silver will ever be returned as a monetary metal in this country?
Absolutely.
Or do you think it's going to be an industrial metal?
It will be both. What I'm trying to say is the industrial demand for it is high because
it
has unique
properties. It's too high. I mean, it's
silver.
See, there's a problem. It depends on where they're going to set prices, assuming we go back to a monetary base that's in metal. If they set prices of silver, what do you think the industrial price of silver should be right now?
Well,
I mean, you can only guess at it and rest that sort of thing, but we're selling it for $22 an ounce. What do you think is a true free market price for silver just as an industrial metal right now? What would be your guess?
From what I can pick up from the cost of mining of this, that, and the other, I would say closer to $30 an ounce, because if the silver is depressed this long, it is, we're not going to be producing any except as a byproduct of copper and zinc and such as that. But it's minimal. And as a monetary metal, if it's the classic 15-1, Sir Isaac Newton was knighted because he was the one who came up with the relationship between silver and gold as a monetary metal. That's why he was knighted. That's why he became a sir. So classically, it's been somewhere along those lines. And it's more useful as a monetary metal because I remember when I could buy a loaf of bread at the thrift store for a silver dime.
Yeah.
Okay?
You still
and
can. You've got a silver dime. You can still
buy
your much that one.
Exactly, but you kind of hard to walk in there with a piece of gold. So
I agree. There's a utility for silver just because you can put it into smaller coins, essentially less valuable coins.
Yeah.
You walk in with a coin that's worth $2,000. It's hard to make change on a loaf of bread.
Okay.
On the other hand, you can walk in with a
you know, silver dollar, and you can get that bread and still get change. I agree. I understand what you're saying. Beyond that, something you want to close out with, Jim?
Well, it's just it has unique properties. This is how we silver mirrors, for instance. It will always be consumed because I remember when I was doing darkroom photography, I tried to grab the silver from anything. As a matter of fact, I went around and got old x-rays. This and other. It's not real easy, but it's going to be a point where people are going to be taking x-rays and yanking the silver out of it. So I've just been fascinated with the stuff since the get. And the only thing I can tell you is that both are good, both have their purpose and their place. But, it's terribly suppressed, worse than gold, I think. I'll let you fellas go. You have a wonderful show, and you always banter back and forth.
Don't run off. I want to ask you a question, Jim Rogers. Have you ever been in radio?
Oh, yeah.
Have you got
radio I know God gave them to me, but I preferred actually eating on a regular basis compared to talking on the radio, but I was on the technical end of it. Alpha Broadway, Pop X-Ray was my ham license before the FCC decided not to renew it. Do you remember a fellow by the name of Gary Boggs in Nashville, Tennessee, steel player?
Nope.
Okay.
What was his name
well,
again?
Anyway,
what was his name?
Gary Boggs used to be steel player for Patsy Cline, Tammy Wynette, George Jones.
Okay.
Well,
no, I didn't ever come across him.
No, I live, eat, and breathe electronics for a living, so I was on the technical end of things. But, yeah, God gave me his voice, so I better use it right. But, the only thing I want to mention to you is that there's a place for silver and for gold.
I agree there's a place for it, but it's not at the current price. I mean, at the current price, they're saying the place is in the trash.
The place
for
right
your guess, estimate that a true free market price of silver is $30 an ounce? I'm not competent to make a credible estimate of what the price of silver should be, but on an industrial basis alone, from what I understand, the supply is so small, the demand is so great that I don't think 30 is enough.
Well,
I think in a true free market, you might be looking at $70, $100 silver. I don't know if that's true or false or it's irrational, but I don't think it's completely irrational. I think it might be true, but who can say? Roger, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, I would tell you this, and Jim probably doesn't know this. Al does. I'm sure the audience does it. We've talked about it a couple of times. Al and I's paths crossed originally about 15 years ago when I was the only rep in the world for a medical product called Silver Lawn, which was developed by an orthopedic surgeon. It was his life's work 20 years up in North Georgia, and he had it patented, and he had it okayed by the FDA as a device. And I stumbled into the guy when he was down and out, and literally I was the only rep in the world for that product for 4 years. That's how I'm able to live in Argentina. So I know a lot about silver because the inventor, whose name's Bart Flick, is literally the world's expert on silver because he had to become an expert on it to be able to get all that FDA approval and all the patents. And so
Tell them what the product was.
With Silverlon, it's a silver-plated bandage. And what it does is exactly what you were saying, Jim, is it really allows the body to heal itself by completing the electrical circuit over a wound, a burn, a laceration, any of that. Now, I'm going to tell you a real big secret right here today with as much looming as we've got. You can do the same darn thing with colloidal silver and aluminum foil. It will do the same thing, those three properties. It will absolutely kill the bacteria. The sooner you get it on after an injury, it keeps down the swelling, and therefore it keeps down the scarring. And it recompletes the circuit when the aluminum foil or the silver cloth goes on there. And what it does is it tricks the body. Because evidently, and this is what Bart learned in all those years of experimenting, when you cut yourself and those tissues are open, evidently what causes the pain impulse to be generated is there's no electrical field from the skin over those exposed nerves. And that's what generates the pain impulse, because when you put aluminum foil or this silver cloth on there, very quickly, even from third-degree burns, within 20, 30 minutes, the pain is gone.
Well, I get what you're saying, because the body is signaling you that there's some sort of a disruption here because they can't make that signal isn't crossing. There's a problem here. It's like trying to make the internet connection from here to Argentina.
Once in a while, we figure out there's a problem between here and there, and we've got to try to repair or compensate. But the body's, when as soon as the body gets the message that the circuit is complete again, then the body is fooled into thinking there's no wound. It may be.
It literally tricks the body. And I mean, listen, I worked with this stuff intimately for a number of years. Al, you know, you contacted me trying to sell some advertising for the anti-shock.
You're too smart for me, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, man. Actually, the FDA had just suspended the approval to sell to the public. They would still let us sell to hospitals and doctors and stuff, but we couldn't go around and work the expos, which is what I'd been doing for a few months. And that's why we couldn't advertise with you that day. And that's true, you know. So, but I saw miracles happen with this stuff. I mean, I could sit here to the two, three more shows, just example after example of miracles with this silver cloth. And what I'm trying to get across to you now is you can do the same thing with colloidal silver and aluminum foil. The important thing is you don't let anything get between the aluminum foil and the skin. You can't put any salves or any of that stuff on there that'll mess with the contact and the circuitry. But you can put colloidal silver. It will kill all the bacteria, and the water will allow the current to pass.
All right. Well, good information. And Jim, well, thank you for your call, and we got to move on.
Okay.
All right, thank you, Jim. Mm-hmm. All right, what else have we got here, Roger? Here's one from CNET, CNET, National Security Agency admits listening to U.S. phone calls without warrants. National Security Agency has acknowledged in a new classified briefing that it does not need court authorization to listen to domestic phone calls. The contents of a phone call could be accessed simply based on an analyst deciding that. If the National Security Agency wants to listen to the phone, the analyst's decision is sufficient without any other legal authorization required. What are we losing here, Roger?
Well, you've already lost it. You lost it when you didn't declare yourself not to be a resident or a citizen of the United States and their property so they can manipulate you and pass these kind of onerous regulations against you, which is exactly what's happened.
Well, the other thing that's being lost, and it's coincident with what you're talking about, we have Edward Snowden, who is the one who leaked the information about Verizon and Google and who knows how many other entities that are assisting government in spying on our telephone calls. He said he was doing this because he wanted to protect Americans' privacy, their right to privacy. And I looked at it and I've thought about it a little myself, and it goes much deeper than the right to privacy, which was made famous by the Supreme Court back in the 60s, I believe, maybe the 70s, but I think the 60s, when they discovered the right to privacy in the penumbra of the Constitution, and the right to privacy allowed abortion, right? And ever since then, the right to privacy has been something I at least feel a little bit squeamish about claiming a right to privacy. However, what we're really talking about when the government spies on us without warrant, they're spying in a way that violates the presumption of innocence. Historically, the cops couldn't kick in the door just because they felt like it. They had to have a warrant. They had to go to a judge and say, look, we have some evidence to say that this guy over here has probably violated some laws and we need to kick in the door. And if the judge is convinced that the presumption of innocence for this man has at least been challenged, all right? It can't be defeated until he's found guilty in the court of law, but if it's challenged, the judge can say, okay, go over there, kick in the door, and find out if he's actually growing any, you know, he's making meth or whatever else he's doing behind the door. Today, insofar as they enter the house by electronic means, they're kicking in the door without a judicial warrant, and in doing so, they're saying, you have no presumption of innocence, right? This is a major loss. This is a serious and important issue. We'll talk a little bit more about it when we return. I'm Alfred Adisk here on Financial Survival with Roger Sales. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click Satellite System.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Co-host is Roger S. Sales. Roger will be with us in a moment. Want to remind you about today's special: 1/2 ounce of 1/2 ounce American Gold Eagle, 1/2 ounce American Silver Eagle. Shipping included, $795. Can't beat the deal. 1-800-375-4188. $795. For 1/2 ounce gold eagle, 1 ounce silver eagle, shipping included, $795. Give Carl a call at Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Roger, do you have anything you'd like to add or comment on this notion that we are being deprived of the presumption of innocence? Roger, are you there?
Well, I think the key word there is presumption. I'm here. I'm right here, aren't I? Am I here?
Yeah.
Are you?
Yeah, you're here now. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
I can hear you now.
Okay. I think that the key word is presumption, and it seems to me that that's the old way of doing things that's constitutional by the book, if you will. And as they've had this newer system in place for a long time, but gradualism brought it along the line, in my mind, as I think about it legally and logically, I don't know that property has any kind of presumptions of innocence or privacy.
Well, that would be that corresponds, but nevertheless, we are the property you're referring to, meaning U.S. citizens, I think, for lack
is
of
the people.
Yeah,
that of course.
They don't understand
their
property in the government's mind. And the government doesn't want to come right out and say, well, you're all just a bunch of animals and property and we own you. Because they know that might make the great unwashed a little bit upset.
So the government can't admit it. They have to presume it. But the presumptions become increasingly obvious where eventually some of what they regard as animals, that would be folks like you and me, that they presume to be animals, are going to wake up and say, wait a second, I'm not an animal. You know, I'm a man made in the image of God. I'm endowed by my creator with certain unalienable rights. And from your perspective, Roger, how are you going to describe these people?
They're, I guess I'd call them goy.
No. What I'm saying is, I'm trying to make the alternative perspective and say, no, I'm not an animal. I'm not property. And what is your what's your description for the people that defy the presumption
you know,
that they're animals and/or property?
I wanted to discuss this with you actually on the air, so it's good that we segued into this, even though we backdoored it into there. And that is this, I believe that, like you do, that I'm made in God's image and I'm protected by his rights and that I owe him my duties. And my affidavit stated that, and the State Department has agreed with me three times. You know, about 2 weeks ago, you opened up the program with the foreign correspondent. It means you're a foreign correspondent to Argentina, and we battered around with that just a little bit. And while we were talking that day, and I never did get a chance to come back to it, it reminded me of the concept of residency. All right. And really, I believe that this is part of their plan. If you go back to Vattel and the Law of Nations, he says that all residents, he uses the term resident aliens. So all residents are really resident aliens because you're stating that laws from another jurisdiction apply to you and you're not in the jurisdiction. Okay?
All right. So what you're saying, let's clarify that. Let's just clarify that point for a moment. What you're saying is if the government defines me as a resident, they're treating me as if I were really a citizen of another country, Mexico, for example, or England or Argentina. But I am currently residing, even though my nationality is in a foreign country, I am currently residing within, say, the state of Texas or Nebraska or New
Correct.
York or whatever.
Well, you were in Texas and now you're in Oregon. In both of those places, you know, if you'd have said, are you a resident, you would have, the normal person, not you, of course, because we know you're not normal, Al. But if the normal person, they say, are you a resident?
For a long time, but go ahead, Roger.
I knew it was a softball for you. But a lot of people ask you if you're a resident, and you automatically assign the geographical definition. Yes, I live here. But they're asking you that in a legal definition of where do you get your rights and who do you give your duties to. So when you say you're a resident of Oregon, what you're really saying is, yes, I'm a federal citizen, and I am get my rights from federal from Washington, D.C., and it is to them that I owe my duties. Now, we take that a layer down, and we've analyzed it and know that that in the feudal law, which they brought in with the 14th Amendment, that means you're their property, okay? So this is that residency thing that you were back on. And like I said, I was thinking about it, and I want to take it a step further. So if a person like you that's beat them in court, and a person like me that's beat them administratively with an affidavit. I know there's people out there listening that have followed my footsteps and done this on their own after reading my book and stuff. So if they ask you now, Al, in thinking that residency is where you get your rights and owe your duties, legally, the definition, if somebody asks you where you're a resident of now, what do you say?
I would say I'm not a resident. I would say I'm a national. I mean, that would be my first. That would be my first choice, and when I would say a national of the state of Oregon or the state of Texas, but I would not admit that I was a resident of Texas because the Texas Constitution says in part, I don't have it right in front of me, but I've studied it, and I haven't studied Constitution of Oregon. It says that it's for the people of the state of Texas, and you have to identify yourself as one of the people of the state of Texas to claim the rights under the Constitution.
All right, under the
correct,
state constitution.
But let's take this,
if
let's
I
take
say
this
I'm a charge. Resident, by definition, I'm saying I'm not one of the people of the state of Texas. I'm not one of the people of the state of Oregon. That would be
correct.
The implication from what you're telling me right now. And
well,
national
that,
might
well,
not be my choice. My choice, in fact, I might say I'm not a resident. I'm one of the people of the state of Oregon at this time.
Okay, well, you're still missing my point here, and that's this. If I just hit this, this just hit me a couple of weeks ago, so I've been wanting to talk about it, is that now if anybody asks me where my residency is, I'm a resident of heaven, because that's where I get my rights, and that's where I want my duties, and that's whose law I'm under. So that's where my residency is. I'm in heaven. Now, how about that little card of apple?
Well, it's an interesting argument, but myself, I would see – I'm looking at this from the perspective of how do I access the rights that are guaranteed in the state constitution. That's one of my considerations right now.
Well,
and therefore, I would be inclined to claim to be one of the people of the state of Oregon in order to access that state constitution's protections. As one of the people of the state of Oregon, I would be largely exempt, at least in theory, from the powers of the government of the United States.
So
now, if I claim to be resident, any kind of a resident, all right, any kind of resident of any place, it means I don't have access to those state constitution. That's the implication to me. I won't say that's God's truth or the absolute law, but that's the appearance to me. So I'm going to be hesitant to ever declare that I'm a resident. Hesitant to declare I'm a resident. You get that, Roger?
It can't. Yes, I do, and it can't.
I'm breaking
be that
into
way.
Rap. Gonna, you see, I got I'm, that rap thing going on here, Roger. But
I know you do. I can't get a word in. It's when you get under the protection of God, though, they had access to the state constitutions because that was the original political status.
I agree with you. I agree. I'm just saying I would still be hesitant. I would say, see, where I'm coming on that, instead of saying I'm a resident of heaven, I'm going to sit back and say I'm a man made in the image of God, as per Genesis 1:26-28. On the sixth day, God created man in his image and gave him dominion over the animals. I am a man made in God's image, and beyond that, I'll claim under the Declaration of Independence that I'm also endowed by my Creator with certain unalienable rights. I'm not claiming to be a resident, but I, from my perspective, I'm accomplishing the same result you're trying to reach by saying a resident of heaven. You know, there's always a bunch of different strategies that can be used. It's a question of how good are you at using a particular strategy. I use the analogy all the time. It's like martial arts. You can study boxing. I can study karate. Somebody else can study judo. If we get into a fight, who's going to win? Well, it depends. A good boxer can absolutely beat the crap out of a guy in judo or karate that are just mediocrities. But if you're good at your particular martial art, you can win. Same thing with a particular legal strategy. If you are really good at a particular legal strategy, you can win. If you're just faking it, you're in trouble. You're going nowhere.
Well, you know, a lot of those lawyers build their whole career on one statute now.
Do you mean a particular statute, or are you...
Well, yeah, they'll take one little essence of bankruptcy or something like that, one little area of the law, and that's their entire career is based on that whole thing and the procedures that...
That's exactly right. And if you can master that one strategy, you can make a good living if you're an attorney, and you can also, if you can master, you know, one or two fundamental strategies, you can frequently hold the government at bay. You know, even if you're not an attorney. All right, so what else we got here, Roger? We've got 3 minutes to go.
I just want to say that was something that just hit my mind the other day because I thought it was cool, but I'd never thought of it before. But if that's where you're receiving your rights, you owe your duties, then and technically your residency in that legal definition is in heaven. And so I guess that means heaven's here on earth for us, Al. So tip my hat to you, buddy.
I won't agree that heaven is here on earth. This seems more like purgatory to me, but not having been to either heaven or purgatory in recent memory, I'm only speculating. I'm not sure whether it's more like heaven, purgatory, or perhaps someplace else, maybe a third place. We'll see.
Well, it's too bad because it could be heaven on earth, and it is being made hell on earth by these
monsters that are
I understand that. The world, you know, could be
a whole bunch better. That's
if why you for a bunch of people who seem to think that it's only for them.
That's why you and I are here today, spending these time on the radio to try and get some of these concepts across to people out there and help maybe clarify your walk and your path for you and give you some direction. And maybe you won't make the same mistakes Al and I made, because those mistakes we made over the years sure did hurt, didn't they, buddy?
Yeah, they did at the time. But the truth of the matter is we learned so much from them. You know, that if you had it to do all over again, you almost have to make the mistakes. I interviewed Jill Bannister on the program yesterday, and at one point he talked about if we'd had real justice, he would never have been taken to court. He was threatened with, he could have had 15, 20 years in the slammer over his resistance to the income tax. And he did go to court, and he beat the IRS in court. And he said if there had been real justice, he would never have been tried. But from a perspective of God's justice, it actually worked out a lot better, him being tried, because he made a far more powerful statement for everyone else to see and hear. Yeah, he was charged unjustly, but he was found innocent. Huh? This is a major accomplishment, and sometimes you got to go through that fire. You got to walk through the fire. Now, not walk around it. You got to walk through the fire. And then when they say, then the world looks back and they say, look, he walked through the fire. Oh, my gosh. There must be something extraordinary happening here.
Well, and I'm going to tell you what, I wouldn't trade my walk over those coals for anything, because I'm going to tell you one thing flat out is this made me a better person. I'm stronger. I know more. I'm much, much more resilient. And I've gotten to a point where, I mean, it empowers you. That's the best word I can use.
No, I know.
It is empowering to walk through that veil of intimidation and get on the other side and go, I beat you.
Yeah, I know. Because then you know that they can be defeated, for one thing. And you know that you are capable of defeating them. It doesn't mean that it'll always work out that way. There's not a guarantee. But once you succeed, then you can sit back and if I did it once, I can do it again. It takes an enormous amount of fear out of facing this adversary. You say, I can
sure
win
does.
This thing. I'm not necessarily going to win, but I could.
Huh? It just makes you a better person, you know,
absolutely.
Because it makes you more fearless. All
yep.
right. And then you become their real worst nightmare.
I'll tell you what, Roger, we've got about 45 seconds left. Why don't you take 30 and tell folks where they can find your book, contact you, whatever it is you'd like them to know.
Well, you got all that stuff on the website, and it's www, and I'll spell it, say it and spell it, surfs-up.com, SERFS-UP.COM or NET, and you can find the information there. If you want bulk orders or my book and the special tax book by John Benson, you can go by thebookshelf.us and give Jeff a call, and he'll work that out with you. They're both very important books.
All right, Roger, thanks very much for being on the program. We will see you again this Friday. Roger will be here with us on Friday. I want to thank all of you folks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Roger, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. There never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.